I spent a week going through three C++ performance sources, Paul Bilikon and Burak Gündüz's 2023 paper, C++ Design Patterns for Low Latency Applications, Including High Frequency Trading, Imperial College, with the companion zero Burak/Imperial_HFD repo, Jonathan Mueller's Cache-Friendly C++ deck from C++ Con 2025, and Prithvi Okaday and Kathleen Baker's C++ Performance Tips, Cutting Down on Unnecessary Objects, also from C++ Con 2025. Together they cover the full low latency stack, compile time dispatch, cache layout, allocation avoidance, concurrency primitives, the LMAX disruptor. Every one of them cites benchmark numbers. None of them publish a runnable harness. So I wrote one. 15 self-contained nano bench programs, each one a single .cpp file, each one built with G++ O2 optimization on C++ 23 standard inside a GCC 14 Docker container, each one linked from this post as a working godbolt session that compiles and executes with the nano bench library. The numbers below are what came out of my machine, an Intel i7 class desktop with 10 physical cores, 4.6 GHz boost, 48 kilobytes L1 cache data cache per core, 1.28 megabytes L2 cache per core, 24 megabytes shared L3 cache. All runs share the same compiler, same flags, same turbo settings on. Nano Bench, not Google Benchmark, is the harness throughout. Three reasons. It is a single header, it prints relative speedups by default, which is usually what you actually want, and it is one-click available as a library on Godbolt. If you have never used it, the entire API I needed for this post is bench.relative.true.run.name/code/nano, do not optimize away, x. The surprise, about a third of the textbook speedups did not reproduce cleanly. Cache warming is 7 times slower than cold in my setup. Bitmask branch reduction is 1.6 times slower than the cascade it was supposed to replace. The bottom three in the scoreboard are not failures of the source papers. They are reminders that every micro-optimization has a context where it loses. This post shows when each pattern wins, when it loses, and why. Section, ground rules for the benchmarks. Before any numbers, for rules I held myself to. 1. Single file, no build system. Each.cpp define the Ankrel nano bench implement macro and hashtag includes nanobench.h. Paste into Godbolt with the nano bench library selected in the compiler dropdown. Hit execute the code. Done. 2. Nano do not optimize away on every sync. Without it, the compiler folds the measured result into void. The Imperial paper quotes Razovsky's C++ Con 2022 talk. A naive clock_gitime benchmark looked 85 times slower than TSC on a toy harness, but only 2 times slower on her production server. Harness shape matters. Nanobench's guard does the boring work for you. 3. Results are from one machine. The absolute nanoseconds per operation numbers will differ on yours. The ratios are the interesting thing, and the ratios hold reasonably well across machines. 4. O2 optimization on C++ 23 standard. No March native, no profile-guided optimization, no link-time optimization. The STLIB++ that ships with GCC 14. Nothing exotic. Every Godbolt link below was created via the Compiler Explorer Shortener API and has the O2 optimization on C++ 23 standard flags and the NanoBench library pre-wired into an executor pane. Click Execute the Code in the top right of the output pane to run it in the browser. No local build needed. The full source and the Docker file live in a hftperf/benchmarks/directory I keep locally. The Docker file is 3 lines on top of GCC 14 that curls the nanobench.h header into /usr/local/include. The post covers 15 techniques in 5 clusters. Compile time tricks, CPU pipeline tricks, memory layout tricks, concurrency tricks, and standard template library object hygiene. At the end, there is a scoreboard. Section 1. Compile time dispatch. Curiously recurring template pattern versus virtual. The first technique in the Imperial paper is the canonical low-latency polymorphism swap. Replace virtual dispatch, indirect call through of table, with the curiously recurring template pattern so the target is resolved at compile time. The paper reports a 26% win. The measured block is 64 chained calls in a tight loop. 4. Int I equals 0. I less than 64. Plus plus I. X equals P dash F. X. For the virtual case, same shape for curiously recurring template pattern. The curiously recurring template pattern version is 58% faster per 64 call chain, about 0.14 nanoseconds less per call. Modern Intel speculates the virtual target via the branch target buffer after the first iteration, so the indirect call is not blind, but it still pays the indirection cost on the return path, and, more importantly, it blocks inlining. The template version lets the compiler see through F into F underscore impl, inline the body, constant fold the arithmetic around it, and occasionally unroll the outer loop. The virtual call sits behind a memory load the optimizer won't follow. The paper's 26% win maps roughly to my result, 60% on a loop, which reduces to 25% per call after amortizing the non-call cost. If your dispatch is a single call deep inside a system boundary, and the table is warm in L1 cache, the delta vanishes. If you have many dispatches in a tight loop, or if the polymorphism is on a critical path where inlining would fold more than just the call, curiously recurring template pattern is the win. Takeaway: don't switch to curiously recurring template pattern for a virtual is slow vibe. Measure the call site you care about and look for inlineability, not call site cost. A call that the compiler can't look through is what blocks the downstream optimizations that matter. Section 2. ConstExpr. Shift work to compile time. ConstExpr is not a speed knob. It is a time of evaluation knob. Whatever gets folded at compile time disappears from the runtime, and the win is whatever you were paying for at runtime, not a fixed percentage. To measure the best case, I need a function whose result is entirely determined by literal inputs. The second form goes through a function pointer, so O2 optimization can't constant propagate factorial 10 at the call site. The first form is marked constexpr and is called as constexpr int r equals factorial underscore c 10, mandatory compile time evaluation. 70 times speed up, NanoBench reports it as 6,781% relative. The runtime version does 10 multiplies through a function pointer. The constexpr version loads an immediate. This matches the Imperial paper's 90.88% figure almost exactly. The catch: if you don't hide the runtime version behind an indirection, the compiler often folds it too. The paper warns, marked performance variance doesn't imply constexpr consistently amplifies runtime speed. What constexpr guarantees is that no matter what the optimizer does, the result is at compile time. That is a correctness property as much as a speed one. It is also what makes static underscore assert possible. Section 3. Cache warming, the counterexample. This is the pattern the Imperial paper reports the biggest win on, 90% speed up. The idea: before the trade signal fires, pre-read the data the hot path will touch, so L1 cache / L2 cache already hold the relevant lines. My attempt: warming the cache made the benchmark 7 times slower. That is not a measurement error. It is the honest answer to a naive reading of the pattern. The arithmetic: warming sequentially touches all 16 megabytes, and equals 4,194,304 INTs equals 16 megabytes. The real work is only K equals 65,536 random reads. Warming does 64 times more memory traffic than the code it is trying to speed up. Cache warming pays when two conditions hold. 1. The warming work is done in time you'd otherwise be idle. A trading engine walks its price data structures on every market tick, so when a signal actually fires, the caches are already hot as a side effect. The cost is not a dedicated warm-up. It is spread across the entire tick stream. 2. The hot path accesses significantly more than the warm-up. A 10 megabytes warm-up for a 1 gigabytes hot path pass is a win. A 16 megabytes warm-up for a 256 kilobytes hot path pass is a catastrophe. The Imperial paper benchmark sits in regime 1. Warming is amortized across an outer loop that runs far more often than the warm-up. My benchmark sits in regime 2, in reverse. The lesson is that cache warming is a system design pattern, not a micro-optimization. If you see cache warming in a PR description and the warm-up pass is larger than the measured pass, you have a git revert in your future. Section 4. Loop unrolling. Same general idea as a thousand other loops. Fewer iterations of a bigger body, less branch decrement overhead, more ILP exposed. To keep the compiler from auto-unrolling the baseline, I hid the accumulator behind a volatile. 3.7 times speedup. The paper reports 4,539 versus 1,260 nanoseconds, 3.6 times, on the same workload, within 5% of the ratio I got. Caveat, volatile is unrealistic. In production code, O2 optimization will already auto-unroll this loop and my baseline would disappear. The volatile is there to isolate the effect, to show you what unrolling does when the compiler cannot do it for you. The real use case is an inner loop the compiler won't touch because of aliasing, pointer indirection, or a call it can inline through. In that case, unrolling by hand buys you the pipeline depth the compiler would have given you if it had seen through the abstraction. The paper also warns about instruction cache pressure. An aggressively unrolled hot loop can bloat past L1i, costing more than it saves. Don't unroll more than 4 times unless you have the perf profile to back it up, is the rule I apply. Section 5. Short circuit operand order. Any C++ programmer reads that end-end in short circuit and moves on. The high-frequency trading version of the observation is, if the second operand is 1,000 times more expensive than the first, and the first is usually true, put it first. Two loops, one with expensive, I cheap, I, one with cheap, I expensive, I. The cheap first form is 3 million times faster per 128 iteration loop. That is a correct reading of the numbers, and a deeply misleading one. Cheap first is literally free because the OR short circuits before any work happens, while expensive first pays the full LCG cost on every call. The real-world high-frequency trading framing from the paper. Error checks are cheap, execute hot path is expensive, but the error check is what gates the hot path. Arrange your Boolean gates so the cheapest, most often settling check fires first. One note worth pinning. I had to add the G_sync global to make expensive observable, because without it, O2 optimization figured out that expensive's return was not used when cheap was true and deadstripped the call. If your pre-check isn't obviously pure, the compiler will reorder for you. But if it is pure, you need to make the ordering explicit or write it as two separate if statements. Section 6. Branch reduction via bitmask flags. The Imperial paper advocates replacing a cascade of if, check A, else if, check B, with a single bitmask flags that accumulates all failure bits, followed by a single test if, flags, handle, flags. The pitch, fewer branches, fewer mispredictions. Reported speedup, 36%. The flag reduced version is 1.6 times slower. The cascade wins. Why my orders make cascades look good? They all pass. All price zero, all quantity zero, etc. The branch predictor, after 1 to 2 iterations, pegs every branch as not taken, and the cascade collapses to execute 5 cheap compares, fall through, return true. The flag version always does all 5 comparisons and all 5 conditional moves, accumulating into F, and only then tests F equals equals zero. When every check is predicted correctly, branches are nearly free. Unconditional work is not. Branch reduction wins when the checks mispredict. The paper's benchmark likely used inputs that tripped the predictor. Errors fired roughly half the time. Mine don't. The rule to internalize, bitmask error flags are a mispredic mitigation tool, not a branch avoidance one. If your error paths are rare and predictable, your original cascade is probably fine. If they fire 20 to 50% of the time, bitmask flags, or, better, the expect built-in slash, likely, forwards, unlikely, family of hints, start to pay. Section 7. Software prefetching on pointer chases. The hardware prefetcher is great at linear strides and bad at pointer chasing. A linked list, a shuffled index, a tree walk. Those are the places where the prefetch built-in earns its keep. I built a shuffled list stored in a vector of value, next underscore index, pairs, which is as adversarial for the HW prefetcher as a normal linked list without the allocator hops. 20% speedup on a pointer chase the HW prefetcher was supposed to be helpless on. The paper reports a 23.5% win on a sequential sum prefetch benchmark, mind matches. For sequential access patterns, the HW prefetcher has already done the work, and the software prefetch is redundant or counterproductive. Prefetching has a narrow sweet spot. The prefetched line must arrive before the dependent load, but after the cache can hold it, or it gets evicted before use. My one-node look-ahead is probably too close. Tuning the look-ahead distance is its own side quest. Typical values are enough iterations to cover a DROM round trip, which is 10 to 30 ahead on modern chips. A production implementation would retune per target CPU. The broader honest framing, software prefetch is a last resort. Fix the access pattern first. If you can't, use the prefetch built-in and measure. The wrong look-ahead distance costs more than it saves. Section 8. Lock-free. Atomic increment versus mutex. The paper's concurrency section shows the cleanest speedup of the bunch. Four threads hammering a single counter. For 0.3 times speedup. The paper reports 175,904 versus 65,369 nanoseconds at 10,000 iterations, which is the same ballpark. The atomic version is still contended. Every fetch head still has to get exclusive ownership of the cache line, but it skips the kernel round trip that the mutex pays whenever the fast path loses. The mutex cost is not the lock/unlock happy path, which is lock-free on modern libcs. It's the fallback to a futex call under contention. What the paper is honest about, and I want to repeat, atomics are not a drop-in fix. Writing correct lock-free code, especially anything with a shared queue, is how you get Heisenbugs that only reproduce at O3 optimization on your coworker's machine. The paper quotes itself, lock-free programming is more complex than its lock-based counterparts and is thus more prone to bugs, particularly if misused. Use atomics where the semantics are simple, counters, sequence numbers, single producer, single consumer queues, and prefer well-tested libraries. Folly's multi-producer, multi-consumer queue, Moody Camel's concurrent queue, the LMAX disruptor port in the Imperial repo, over rolling your own. Section 9. Array of structs versus struct of arrays. The cleanest just do this win. Jonathan Mueller's cache-friendly C++ deck has a benchmark I wanted to replicate as soon as I saw it. You have a struct person name, salary, age, department, and your hot loop averages ages. In an array of structs layout, each cache line holds one person and reads three fields you don't care about. In a struct of arrays layout, each cache line is dense with ages. 3.2 times speedup on 100,000 persons. Mueller's deck reports 6 times on the same test. His person has more fields, or he's on a smaller cache line. But the shape of the result holds. The reason struct of arrays wins is straightforward. Size of person is 56 bytes on my libstdc++, so one person consumes most of a 64-byte line, but only 4 bytes, the age field, are useful. The struct of arrays version packs 16 INTs into every line. Same algorithm, 16 times more useful bytes per DROM fetch. Use struct of arrays when the hot loop touches one or two fields. The collection is big enough to miss cache. You don't need parentity locality. Avoid struct of arrays when you have to update multiple fields atomically per entity or your collection fits in L1 cache anyway. Then the extra indirection of parallel vectors costs more than the line density saves. Section 10. False sharing. The multi-core scaling killer. For threads, each incrementing its own counter. No locks, no shared state in the logical sense. But if the four counters sit in the same cache line, every plus-plus forces the cache coherence protocol to invalidate every other core's copy. You get the cost of shared state with none of its benefits. Volatile here is load-bearing. Without it, the compiler turns 4, long I equals 0, I iters, plus-plus I, plus plus p.ct, into p.t, plus equals iters, and the false sharing effect disappears along with the loop. Real code does real memory accesses. Volatile is the fastest way to force the compiler to model that. 8 times speedup just by padding. And it only gets worse as thread count grows. False sharing scales backwards. The idiomatic C++ fix is a Lignus, STD hardware destructive interference size, the STLIBS way of spelling. Give me enough space to not collide with my neighbor. Use it. Hardcoding 64 is wrong on ARM, where it may be 128, and wrong on CPUs with larger prefetch-fetch pair sizes. A subtler form of this bug is the one Mueller's deck highlights, per-thread scratch buffers in ASTD vector, accessed by thread index. Every thread is reading its own scratch, but the vector packs them contiguously, so four scratch buffers fit in one line, and you have recreated the pack counter pattern. The fix is either the Alignas above or the sturdier rule, write to a thread local, and only store into the shared vector at the end. Section 11. Mplace back plus reserve versus push back. From Okade and Baker's C++ Con 2025 deck, push back, TN, constructs a temporary mplace back, args, constructs in place. On top of that, if you know how many elements you are inserting, reserve avoids the geometric reallocation storm. Push back, heavy, with no reserve. Mplace back, with no reserve. Mplace back, after reserve, in. The push slash mplace difference is noise in this test. GCC's STD vector constructs a heavy in the buffer via move from temporary, so the extra copy the deck warns about is already optimized out when the value type has a no accept move. What does matter is the reserve. 2x speed up by avoiding the 14 reallocations a 10,000 element pushback loop would otherwise do. Pattern to keep. Always reserve when you know the size, even if pushback and mplace back look equivalent on trivially movable types. The deck's broader guidance. Prefer mplace back as a habit because some value types have expensive construction from temporary paths, still stands. You just won't see the cost on types with trivial moves. Section 12. STD string view instead of const string and. Passing a string literal to a const string and parameter constructs a temporary string, which for strings past the small string optimization threshold means a heap allocation per call. STD string view takes a PTR, length, pair, and never allocates. 25% win per call. At scale, the cost scales with heap alloc pressure. In a log parsing hot loop that calls thousands of string taking functions per record, the string view version can be 3-5 times faster than the const string inversion because allocator contention compounds. Caveats the deck lists and I've hit in practice. String view does not own its memory. Passing s.substr as a view is fine. Storing a view whose underlying string went out of scope is a use after free with no compiler warning. Clang has W dangling GSL warning for some cases, but it is not comprehensive. String view is not null terminated. Passing it to a CAPI, FOPEN, syscall, forces a conversion back to string. Chromium's C-string view is what you want there. It is a null-terminated view. For sync parameters, set name, string, where you will store the string, pass by value, and move into the member. The deck is emphatic about this. For will move from parameters, pass by x, and move, string view is for read-only inspection. Section 13. Transparent comparators for associative lookup. STD set, string, find, hello, constructs a temporary string before calling operator less than. If the query string is past small string optimization, that is a heap allocation per lookup. The fix is to template the comparator. With less, the find overload that takes any type comparable to string is viable, and no temporary is constructed. The requirement. Your comparator must opt in with using is_transparent equals void, which STD less does. 24% win on 1,000 lookups of a 40-byte key. The gap widens as keys grow, because longer keys force longer hashing slash compare work on a heap allocated string. My keys are 40 bytes. On a 200-byte key, the transparent version would roughly double its lead. A footgun. If your stored keys are short enough to always fit in small string optimization, less than or equal to 15 bytes on libstdc++, transparent comparators buy you nothing because the heap allocation never happened. Always match the benchmark to the real key size distribution. Section 14. Smaller primitive types, more items per cache line. Mueller's deck makes the case that uint8_t beats end on a cache-bound sum because you fit 4x more items per line. The reality on GCC 14 with O2 optimization. Small wins, not the 2x the deck advertises. Int16_t and uint8_t are each 12% faster than int32_t. The reason, auto-vectorization. O2 optimization turns each sum into a MAVQ / pad style single instruction multiple data loop, and the 16-byte single instruction multiple data register holds for int 32 or 8 int 16 or 16 un 8 underscore t. But the vector throughput is limited by memory bandwidth once the array exceeds L2 cache, so the 4x register density only translates to a minor runtime gain. The more interesting finding in the deck, which I did not reproduce in this benchmark, but is worth internalizing, is the strict aliasing pitfall. When you template a function over a byte size type, char/sine char/and sine char/byte are allowed to alias any other pointer, which forces the compiler to reload data.size on every iteration. The fix is hoisting auto size equals data.size out of the loop or using a range based for which hoist implicitly. After that fix, all 5 byte size types reach the same throughput. Takeaway: smaller types are a real L2 cache/L3 cache bound win, but auto vectorization eats a lot of the gain on modern CPUs. Use uint16_t/uint8_t for storage density and memory bandwidth, not for per operation speed. Section 15. Inlining and the trivial call trap. The Imperial paper reports __attribute__always_inline as a 20% win. The win is bigger than that when the called function is trivial and the compiler can fold the call chain entirely. Both functions are literally A plus B. One is called through a guaranteed out-of-line function, one is inlined. The noinline, __always_inline. Spelling is the C++11 attribute syntax equivalent of __attribute__noinline/__attribute__always_inline. Same semantics, same code gen, more modern to read. 5.649 times speed up. That number is not a realistic inlining benefit. It is what happens when the compiler recognizes that the inline version is sum equals 0 plus 1 plus 2 plus. +1023 and folds it to a constant. The noinline version has to do the loop because the call is opaque. This benchmark doesn't measure, is inlining worth it? It measures a function that cannot be inlined is preventing the downstream constant folding pass from firing, which is, in fact, the real reason inlining matters. Call site information, constant arguments, known sizes, proven preconditions, flows through inline calls. Inlining unlocks the rest of the optimizer. The paper's caveat still holds. Over-reliance on inlining may inflate the binary size, possibly undermining instruction cache efficacy. Inlining a 500-line function into 20 call sites adds 10,000 lines of text. A hot loop that previously fit in L1i now spills to L2 cache. Use always_inline for short, hot, leafish functions. Use noinline for large cold paths you want the linker to share. Section, the scoreboard. 15 techniques, sorted by measured speedup ratio on my machine. The bottom two are not failures of the source papers. They are reminders that every micro-optimization has a context where it loses. Cache warming is correct at the system level and catastrophic at the micro-benchmark level. Branch flag reduction is correct under misprediction and counterproductive when the predictor is happy. The cluster that always paid off on my machine. Reserve your vectors. Always. String view for read-only string parameters. Always. Transparent comparators for associative containers keyed by non-small string optimization strings. Always. Alignas STD hardware destructive interference size on per-thread counters. Always. Struct of arrays when the hot loop touches one field of a fat struct. Whenever you can. STD atomic over STD mutex for scalar shared state. When the semantics fit. The cluster that needs a measured application. Constexpr. Win is whatever the runtime was paying, which is zero if the compiler was going to fold it anyway. Loop unrolling. Win is real in compiler hostile loops and negative past the iCache budget. Prefetching. Win depends on look-ahead distance, HW prefetcher behavior, and memory system latency. Don't cargo cult. Curiously recurring template pattern. Switch when inlining across the dispatch unlocks further folding, not because virtual is slow. Bitmask flags. Switch when branches actually mispredict, not because cascades look branchy. Cache warming. System design pattern, not a function level one. Every one of the 15 techniques above is worth the 20 minutes it takes to run its God Bolt link. Click through them. Change the workload. See how the ratios move. The surprising findings, the claim doesn't reproduce results, are the whole point of actually writing the benchmark rather than taking the paper at its word. Section: Canonical C++ alternatives to the non-standard syntax used above. Three pieces of compiler-specific syntax show up repeatedly in the benchmarks above: noinline, always underscore inline, and the prefetch built-in. None of them is part of the C++ standard. All three are GCC/Clang extensions that libstdc++ uses internally, but does not re-export under a name. When there is a standard alternative, I'd use it in every new project. Here is the full mapping for this post. The companion post, C++ low latency, enforced, underscore underscore built-in underscore asterisk, compiler flags, and Clang tidy, benchmarked, has a full section 1.6 with the mapping for the other common built-ins. The popcal built-in std pop count, C++ 20. The swap 64 built-in std byte swap, C++ 23. The unreachable built-in std unreachable, C++ 23. The assume underscore aligned built-in assume underscore aligned, C++ 20. The expect built-in, likely, forward slash, unlikely, C++ 20. And three more. With a nano bench proving each name compiles to the same single instruction as its built-in. If you can target C++ 20 or later, the standard names are a free upgrade on readability and Microsoft Visual C++ portability. Rerunning the four benchmarks above after swapping underscore underscore attribute underscore underscore noinla produced numbers within CPU noise of the originals. The same cogen comes out the other end, which is the whole point. The Godbolt links linked in each section already use the spelling, section, references, and further reading. Billikan, P., and Goon Dues, B., M., 2023. C++ design patterns for low-latency applications, including high-frequency trading. AR14-2309.04259. Source code. Mueller, J., 2025. Cache-friendly C++. C++ Con 2025. Okade, P. and Baker, K. 2025. C++ Performance Tips, Cutting Down on Unnecessary Objects. C++ Con 2025. Drepper, U. 2007. What Every Programmer Should Know About Memory. The Canonical Reference for Cache Hierarchies. Razovsky, O. 2022. Benchmarking C++ Code. C++ Con 2022, on how easy it is to get micro benchmarks wrong. Leitner, M. 2019+. Martinus/NanoBench, the header-only benchmark library used throughout this post. Harris, B. Thompson, M. et al. 2011. The LMAX Disruptor, a high-performance inter-thread messaging library. The paper that gave the Imperial repo its concurrent queue design. If you want to run all 15 benchmarks locally, the Dockerfile is a three-line image on top of GCC 14 that curls the nano bench header into /usr/local/include. Build it, Docker run, vdollar, pwd/work hfdmb bash, c for f in star.cpp. Do G++O2 optimization on C++23 standard /$f, thread, O $f%cpp.out/$f%cpp.out. Done, and you will get a scoreboard for your CPU. The ratios should be close to mine. The absolute nanoseconds per operation numbers will not.